This is WSLR LPFM 96.5 Sarasota, and you're tuned into Perspectives with Kelvin Lumpkin. Welcome to the show today. Today we have on the show Valerie Wojciechowicz, who is an HIV educator and activist, but also she's a person who is living with the HIV virus, and she's come on the show today to really just share her life with her. Valerie, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Kelvin.
First, before we get down to business, I've had the privilege of knowing you for a number of years now, Valerie, and I have to say this, and I don't know if I've expressed this to you before or fully. First, I want to express my admiration for you and for what you do and how you've turned something that could have been devastating into a triumph for your life. And it's actually interesting. It seems that you have actually had living with the HIV virus has actually given you a sense of purpose. Is that an accurate assessment?
Yes, it is. Actually, it's made me very committed to making a difference in the world.
Very good. Valerie, for our viewers, how long have you been infected with the HIV virus? Do you know?
It's been at least 23 years. And one of the scary things about this disease is that in a lot of cases you don't know because there are no symptoms, there are no signs, there's no way to know that you have it. Unless you actually get an HIV test.
So for about 23 years, you think. Now, why do you say 23 years?
Because when I found out that I had it, I kind of found out by accident. I was newly married, and my husband and I were planning to have children, so I applied for life insurance, and they tested me for HIV, and at that point promptly turned me down. Mm-hmm. So that's how I found out that I had it, and that was in 1991. And prior to that, I had absolutely no risk factors for 5 years before that, so I'm thinking like 86-ish.
But it's conceivable that you may have been infected even longer than that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, because there are no symptoms, and it quietly works on destroying your immune system slowly. There's no way to know.
I think it's, and you're right, and I think that's one of the frightening things about this virus is that a person can be infected conceivably for years and have no idea that they're infected. So if a person is infected, what are some of the initial signs and symptoms that they might have?
There really aren't any. In some cases, you may experience flu-like symptoms, but I mean, for most of us, you know, you can think back when the doctors asked me, "Did you ever experience flu-like symptoms?" I'm thinking, "Well, yeah, you know, sometimes you wake up and you're achy or you're whatever and there's really no way to know. It's not like they're a clear cut, okay, well, you broke out in a green rash across your forehead. That means you have HIV. There are no clear cut symptoms. So,
And my listeners may not know this, but I've actually been an HIV educator for the last 10 years, and it's kind of a long story how I got to do that. But it seems to me, and maybe you can concur with this, Valerie, that a lot of people that I've encountered actually found out by accident. They either went to go give blood or got turned down as yourself for insurance. Is that the case? Would you agree with that?
Yes, and one of the reasons that I believe that to be true is because everybody thinks that age-old, it's not going to happen to me. You know, much like I didn't think I was at risk for this disease, you know, because we have this stereotype, we have this idea of, you know, those people who we think will have it, and certainly we're not that. So it's most people don't even know that they're at risk for it. They don't understand that unprotected sex, even one time, is a risk factor.
Yeah, and you said something that I think is very interesting that our listeners definitely need to know. I think there is a common misconception that it won't happen to me, but it's going to happen to those other people or those who are supposedly living irresponsible or just have a lot of high risk factors. But over these years, I've seen a lot of people that I know who weren't necessarily engaging in risky behavior but got infected. And you're right, it only takes one time.
And I see that situation over and over and over and over. And part of the problem is that there's still such a huge stigma attached to this disease. And people still think that, and it's funny, when I talk in the schools, I speak in middle schools and high schools, and I try and talk about the movie Philadelphia, but those kids haven't seen it. So, but, I mean, everybody still thinks that that's what we're going to look like. Mm-hmm. And they think they can afford to choose their partners and take their risks based on how someone looks, because surely you can tell by looking at them if they've got something. And that's the biggest part of my education. And when I walk into the room, the problem for me with doing radio is that people can't see what I look like. Mm. Although today that's probably not a bad thing.
No, you look fine.
But, you know, I mean, I'm healthy, I'm fit, I'm active. And even after an educator goes through, you can't tell by looking at someone there's a different level of understanding when I walk in the door or when Debbie walks in the door or one of the speakers who look good, you know, which we all do today. We don't yeah. look that emaciated look anymore.
And you're absolutely right. And before I became an HIV educator, that was I shared some of those same misconceptions that probably the general public has, that you could look at someone and probably tell if they're infected. But you're a great example of that. You kind of defy those stereotypes. Certainly you don't look like someone who's HIV positive, whatever that looks like. And you're actually a fitness instructor and in very good shape. And so, yeah, there I shared those misconceptions as well.
That's funny because, and even still today, people do. It's the teenage population, adult population, and the teens really baffle me because in their lifetime, there hasn't been a day that AIDS has not been part of their vocabulary. Mm-hmm. And in their lifetime, we've always looked well. So I don't know, and I ask them because I want to know. I want to be a better educator. I ask them, where do they get that idea? Where do they get that picture? And they can't tell me. But they all just still have that sickly, you know, when we go through what kind of person would have HIV, you know, they say all sorts of things that I don't think we can say on the air, but it's never, you know, that nice lady down the street might have it.
Yeah. Now I want to get back to, you said you found out you were infected in 1991. Now, as an educator, I've done some testing over the years, and I've only had to give a positive test result one time. Mm. And I have to say, that's probably one of the hardest things I've ever had to do, was to walk into that room and tell someone that they're HIV positive. What was it like when you got the news that you were positive?
When I actually got the news, it was devastating. It was a little bit different for me because times were different back then. There were no medications. You know, basically, you
so basically a death sentence.
Yeah,
so to speak.
You got diagnosed on Monday. You were dead on Friday. You know, there was no, you know, today when you get diagnosed, we link you to care, get you in case management, talk to you about medications. Mm-hmm. You know, back then, the doctor told me I had no more than 18 months to live. I couldn't have children, and the clock's ticking. You know, doctor's appointments included. You know, have you made your final arrangements? You better think about that.
Wow. Well, now, at the time you found out you were infected, you were actually married. Just talk about that for a little bit and how it affected your husband and your marriage at the time.
I was married, and, you know, one of the things that we were doing was we were planning to have children. You know, we did all this, the whole American dream thing, you know. We bought a house, we bought a piece of land, we were designing our dream home, and, you know, we were all kind of caught up in our future, and, you know, having children was the next logical step, so I thought, oh, life insurance, that's a great idea. And I never really gave it a second thought. They didn't tell me they were testing me for HIV, but even if they had, I wouldn't have been concerned because I had no clue that I was even at risk for it. And they came and took some blood, I signed some papers, and really, truly never thought about it again. And a couple weeks later, they called me up and they turned me down. And I asked why they were turning me down, and they wouldn't tell me.
Wow.
And so I kind of had to work backwards, and this is funny when I talk about this in the schools. You know, there was no internet back then, so it's not even like I could easily get information. So over the next couple weeks, they still wouldn't tell me. They would only release that information to a doctor. Mm-hmm. I mean, as a healthy, fit 28-year-old, I didn't have a doctor. Mm-hmm. So then I started saying, okay, well, what kind of test did you do? And they told me, what I now know to be the ELISA and Western blot tests. Now I know what they're for. Mm-hmm. And I kind of worked backwards and asked a friend of mine who was in science, you know, can mm-hmm. you find out what these tests are for? Mm-hmm. So over the course of about a month, I figured out what it was, but I didn't really totally believe it. Mm-hmm. You know, and my husband and I were kind of like, nah, it can't be that. Mm-hmm. And then I got the letter from the insurance company, mm-hmm. and it was a certified letter, and I'll never forget that day. Mm-hmm. I was sitting in the parking lot at the post office just crying uncontrollably, looking at this letter that said, you are HIV positive.
Wow. And so after you left, did you immediately tell your husband that day the news?
Well, yes. He had called me because he knew I was going to pick up this letter, mm-hmm. and he had called me from work, and I said, you know, let's not talk about it on the phone. He said, okay, well, that means it's really bad. Mm-hmm. And he came home, and I told him, and we just sat on the floor in our living room, and we cried and cried and cried and cried and cried for hours.
Wow.
And then we just said, okay, well, you know, let's do what we can do. And one of the really important things here is that we just assumed from that point on that if I had it, he had it. Mm-hmm. And it's really important for your listeners to know that just because they go out and get an HIV test and their test result comes back either negative or positive, they assume that their partner is the same status. And you cannot afford to make that assumption, because my husband had not gotten this disease yet. So I tested positive and my husband tested negative.
Wow.
It doesn't always get transmitted the first time. You know, it's kind of like getting pregnant. Sometimes it happens the first time. Sometimes it happens the 10th time. You know, it might be the 50th time.
Yeah, and we've seen a lot of instances at, like that at the clinic, where one partner is positive and the other is not. There's obviously no guarantee that sleeping with an infected person will get you infected. But however, that's a risk that nobody should be willing to take. And so what happens in the next few months after, when your husband finds out he's not positive, what happens in you guys' life?
Pretty much nothing. Nothing really changed that much, because there were no medications. We had had a couple friends who had just died. We knew what the reality was, so we decided, you know, we're just going to keep going until we don't.
Mm-hmm.
But then over the next few years, what happened is that it started to get hard for my husband.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this disease isn't just about me as a patient. There are things that I can do. I can take my, back then I couldn't take medications, but there are things I can do to manage my body and be healthy. And the people who love me, there's really nothing they can do but sit there and be powerless.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a struggle for him to know that all our hopes and dreams were out the window, you know. Everything we were planning and designing just wasn't going to happen. And then we kind of went into I call it a little bit of a denial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we didn't do anything risky, but, you know, we didn't talk about it. We didn't think about it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't rearing its ugly head, so we just left it be.
Mm-hmm.
And I was living beyond the point they told me I would live. We didn't question it. Hey, life is grand.
Mm-hmm.
But then about 5 years later, they came out with the medications.
Mm-hmm.
And when they came out with the medications, everything changed. You know, people think the medications are this great thing. You know, they keep you alive. HIV is no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
It really is a big deal. They keep me alive, and I'm grateful for them. But they can come with horrific side effects and consequences.
And I'm glad you said that, because probably the general public doesn't understand that. With the case of HIV, almost the treatment is almost just as bad as the disease itself. Is that a fair statement?
That is a very fair statement. Excuse me. I think sometimes even worse than the disease itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because most people I know, if we've had it a really long time, our HIV is under control.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else in our body is having problems mm-hmm. because of the side effects from the medications. So that's a very fair statement.
Yeah, and you and I have probably seen a lot of people, especially younger generation, who seem to take this virus lightly. And I think they look at persons like Magic Johnson, who I always say is good for the disease and bad for the disease. Good in this respect, that it shows that no one is exempt from being infected with this virus. But then again, some people look at Magic and say, hey, he's looking good, he's okay, and there's really nothing to this virus. But it's a lot more to it than meets the eye.
That worries me about myself as well, because I do look good, and, you know, I teach aerobics, I'm mm-hmm. in the gym, I'm fit, I'm healthy, I work 3 jobs, I'm running around, you know, and people look at me and they think, okay, well, it's no big deal. So I'm very conscious of talking about the ways mm-hmm. that it does affect my life. And the teens will even say things like, I have an uncle who has it, and he's fine, he takes the medication and he's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say, I'll bet you any amount of money he's mm-hmm. not fine.
Mm-hmm.
He looks fine.
Mm-hmm.
He takes the medications. Maybe his numbers are fine.
Mm-hmm.
But the things that we don't talk about are the way it affects your life emotionally,
mm-hmm.
the way it affects your life when you're trying to date, which
mm-hmm.
I ended up having to face, the way it affects your life when you're dealing with everything else. And because we don't look sick, you know, I'll find myself in a room where people will say things, oh, those people with AIDS should be shot, or,
mm-hmm.
you know, they should make an island for those people and just ship them all off. You know, my personal favorite, AIDS is God's way of weeding out the population. that one is really charming when that one comes around.
Yeah.
You know, but people, you know, say things like that. So what I like to talk about is not the medical aspect. Yeah, the HIV medications are great. The numbers that we look at in my body and for a lot of us are phenomenal. There's nothing to worry about there.
Mm-hmm.
But we are not great just because we look great. And Magic talks about that. I saw him at a conference a few years ago, and he said, you know, everybody thinks because I have all this money, that I've got some access to something that's a conference for people with HIV.
Well, he's probably not taking any different medication than you probably.
Exactly, and that's what he said. He said, you know, I've got more money than you guys have. I'm a little more comfortable on my couch. He said, but I have the same diarrhea you have. I have the same depression you have. And actually, what a lot of people don't know is his wife threw him out.
I didn't know that myself.
Not because he was positive. He tested positive, and his wife was negative. And by the way, 20 years later,
yeah.
He still has HIV, and his wife still does not. And remind me, because I'd like to talk a little bit about their campaign.
Okay.
But he said, you know, I'm just a little more comfortable on my couch than you guys are. And he said he got very, very depressed because he would sit there watching TV and watching these guys playing basketball. And he said, I know I can clean his clock and I can't do the thing that I love.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I know that I can't play that sport. So he got depressed. Mm-hmm. And his wife threw him out and he said, how are you going to throw me out of my own house? And she said, just like this, get out. You're not the man I married. When he's ready to come back, he can come back.
Wow, but, I never heard that.
Yeah, but you are not welcome to stay here. And he talked about having to dig deep and, you know, figure out who he was going to be with this disease. And
wow.
I wish he talked about that stuff more because you're right. We are good and bad role models for teenagers.
Yeah. And again, and you kind of alluded to not just, of course, what AIDS does to you physically, but all the social ramifications of having this virus. I mean, there's a lot of discrimination still. I'm sure you're going to share some of your stories. Even affects your life and the people that love you so much who seem helpless as you go through this. But you've had some discrimination even from doctors. Is that right?
Oh boy, yeah. And you know, it they're the things that we don't talk about, and some of the things that we don't even deal with. Mm-hmm. You know, as people with HIV, one of the things I do is mentor. Primarily women with HIV, because there's not a lot of help out there for us. You know, you get diagnosed and they tell you, okay, well, you have to tell your partners, and you know, maybe you should tell your family, and you know, you need to take these medications and so on and so forth, but nobody tells you how. You know, like, it might sound easy, we'll just tell your mother. Telling my mother is one of the hardest things I ever did.
Wow.
You know,
now describe that, how you tell your mother. I met her and she's a sweet lady. How did you do that?
My mom. She is amazing. And
she is.
I don't know that I'm going to make it through the show without crying.
That's
she's
okay.
She's going through some struggles right now. But my mom had a child that had died, and she was left with my brother and myself. And then my dad died. I was 7 and my brother was 9.
Mm-hmm.
And long before it was fashionable to be a single parent, my mom was a single parent. You know, long before there was any help out there, she had to raise both of us by herself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and here I was, 28 years old, saying, oh my God, I'm going to have to tell my mom she's going to bury another child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to have to prepare my mom to go down this road of, you know, sickness and sickness and sickness and sickness and death. You know, because it's not like you just die one day.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of sickness along the way. And it took me about a year to get up the nerve to tell her.
Wow.
And when I finally did, you know, I had gone through the scenario in my head. I was trying to figure out how I'm going to do it. And I didn't have a lot of experience with telling people. And I did, like, what I kind of call the dump and run. I just, like, threw it in her lap and ran away, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of gave her the information, but I didn't open the door for her to talk to me about it too much, you know. I didn't have the strength at that point.
Yeah. Wow.
And, you know, she was devastated. She didn't want to go through what we knew was going to happen, and but she supports me.
Yeah.
And she supports me, like, to, you know, a really ridiculous extent. I do a bike ride from Miami to Key West. It's an AIDS fundraiser. The next one is in November, by the way. If you feel
I just got a new bike, actually, the other
you
day. So.
Did? Okay, we may need to talk about this. It's an AIDS fundraiser, and we ride our bikes from Miami to Key West. And my mom drives down from New Jersey, and she doesn't actually ride a bike, but she comes in, helps direct traffic, hands out water, stuff
really?
Like that, you know. But I know people whose families have turned them away.
Yeah.
You know, I have friends who... their parents never talk to them again. Their siblings never talk to them again. You know, and the judgment from this disease is so severe that even today in 2010, we don't talk about it.
Yeah. And you and I both have some friends in common, I'm sure, who've who've gone through a lot, not just from strangers, but unfortunately from their family members. And that's the sad thing about it. Now, Valerie, now you said that your husband got to a point where he just couldn't handle it. So eventually you guys decided that you just wasn't going to work.
Yes. Eventually it just got to the point where emotionally we got more and more distant from each other and things were not working. So we ended up getting divorced. You know, and this disease, people break it down into its simplest form. You get infected and you die. Mm-hmm. But really that's not the reality of it, you know, mm-hmm. and especially today with the medications. I mean, eventually I'm going to die. But you live a long time. I mean, I've seen numbers 20, 30, 40 years. Yeah. You know, you can live, which sounds good. But the thing is that it takes everything from you along the way.
Well, now let me ask you this since you say that. I've heard some suggest that one day HIV is going to become a manageable disease like diabetes. And some are saying that it is today. Would you agree with that? Is HIV a manageable? Well, in the sense that that like you can live with it like someone will live with diabetes or high blood pressure. Is that the case?
Well, not exactly. Yes and no. Can I be more vague?
because we know some people that are living a long time, and you yourself have been living a long time with this virus.
Absolutely. And when you look at my numbers, I mean, my numbers are exactly where you want them to be. Mm-hmm. My blood work says exactly what you want it to say when you're looking at my HIV strictly. Mm-hmm. So, yes, HIV by itself can be chronic and manageable. Mm-hmm. But what we're not talking about is the things that the HIV medications do to my body, like mm-hmm. the harm they do my liver, my thyroid, my adrenals, the things in your body that break down as a result of taking the medications. And in my case, some of these things are affecting my body because of long-term HIV infection.
Wow. My dad is battling cancer now, and I've just watched what he's going through over the last year or so, how the chemo is just wreaking havoc on his body. And I alluded to it earlier, I don't know which one is worse. I mean, is it possible that the medications are actually maybe killing some people?
Absolutely. Absolutely. From the side effects and the things that break down in our body as a result of taking the medications. I mean, I could probably do an entire show just on the medications and what happens. But, you know, we got the history of this disease, you know, you get infected and you die 5 minutes later. Okay, well, now we have these medications that come out. Everybody should take them, you know. And then we started to learn about the side effects. Okay, wait a minute. Maybe everybody shouldn't take them. You know, let's be a little more discerning here. And when we learned what they really do, we started to, you know, weigh the options. And they do a great job at managing our HIV. Please don't get me wrong. I would not be alive today if it wasn't for my medications. Yeah. And I am so grateful for that. But the things that we need to talk about more are the other things that happen. And when you compare this disease to, like, diabetes, yes, from a medical standpoint, HIV itself, the numbers we look at, T cells and viral load, you could compare them to diabetes. But there are socioeconomic factors that go along with HIV that do not go along with diabetes. If you have diabetes and you're trying to date, all you do is tell the person you're dating, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm diabetic. You know, when you have HIV, you don't just pull up with, okay, well, by the way, I have HIV, you know, come on, let's go.
Well, do you date, Valerie?
yes, I do. And dating is just probably one of the most difficult things that you can face with this disease. You know, when they talk about it being chronic and manageable, from a medical standpoint, yes, you could compare my HIV to diabetes if you're just looking at those two numbers, just my T cells and my viral load. But other than that, it's a completely different animal because the judgment is so huge. And in dating, it is so difficult to date that, unfortunately, a lot of people don't tell.
So what do you do? Let's say you're dating someone, and do you tell them before the first kiss or after the first kiss? How do you do that?
Well, and you know what? I'm not your average duck, so it's kind of hard for me to compare myself. But if you don't mind, I'll take you through my history of doing it, because
okay,
this is the way most people struggle with it. Mm-hmm. For the first 10 years that I had this virus, I didn't tell anyone. Mm-hmm. It took me a year to tell my family. It took a couple years to tell my husband's family. And from there, we didn't even tell our friends. I mean, nobody knew. And when I finally started telling people, like I told my boss and I got fired from my job, I've been turned away from medical treatment. You know, there are a lot of negative consequences when you do tell. But I was still in that safe, protected environment. My husband and I were together for like 15 years. And then when we got divorced, I had never really thought about the ramifications of dating or, you know, what may happen. And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, no. And I didn't know how to do it. So what I would do is I would, like, kind of toy with guys. And even in relationships, friendships in general, I'd say, well, I'm an HIV educator. And if people were accepting of that, then I might go the next step. Mm-hmm. But if they went, ew, you know, then I'm like, okay, my work here is done, and I just, you know, go on about my merry way. And, you know, those responses stage how you're going to do this for the rest of your life, because those negative responses set you back. Mm-hmm. And then if there's a positive response, you know, you get a little encouraged. Well, when it comes to dating, most of the responses are negative. Mm-hmm. So what I used to do is... say I'm an HIV educator, but not really say that I do it as an HIV positive woman. Talk about the volunteer work that I do with AIDS organizations.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of feel them out, see how they respond to that, and then go a little bit further.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the question is, where is too far? Mm-hmm. You know, and I personally, I know that you're not going to get this virus from kissing.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't want somebody to walk away from me with an uncomfortable feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So I disclose before anything happens.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is, in those moments where you're trying to do that, and even leading up to that, you know, I've gone as long as a month without telling someone.
Mm-hmm.
And in that whole time, in my head, I'm a freak. I know I have to tell him. What am I going to tell him? What am I going to say? What am I going to do when he runs away? How am I going to deal with this? Oh, my God. And it is just, like, the hardest thing you can do. And then if the response is negative, it's even harder.
Yeah.
You know, because now this person is not choosing to stay or go because of me.
Mm-hmm.
They're choosing to stay or go because of this thing. And by the way, if that thing was diabetes, they wouldn't have a choice. They, you know, so what? You have diabetes. Who cares?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Now, you and I know a number of people who have actually gotten married to HIV negative people after they've been infected. Would it be easier just to try to date someone who's already positive?
And, you know, that takes the disclosure part of it out, and a lot of times the kids say that, but here's the problem with that. Number one, it's hard to find them. People with HIV do not walk around talking about the fact that they have HIV.
Exactly.
When they're going to the clinic, they park 10 blocks away, weave their way through backyards and parking lots to get to the back door of the clinic so nobody sees them coming.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how far underground we go with this disease.
Mm-hmm.
We are so terrified. So,
I would, and you're right. I've actually seen some people come to the clinic in disguise. Because they can't disclose, and I know it took a while for you to fully come out and let people know, hey, I'm positive, didn't it?
Yes. So then, you know, in regards to finding someone positive, that's hard because of those factors. Now, people say to me, well, what about websites? That's a great idea. There are websites for people with HIV and other STDs to date.
Really?
I have a girlfriend, though. She lives in St. Pete, and her boyfriend lives in California.
Okay.
Because even on a website, there's a disclosure there. You know, your information is out there on the internet forever.
Mm-hmm.
I have friends that want to date, and they're terrified to put their information on that website because, you know, people can find it. It's out in wherever E-land is forever, and somebody may find out. So, yeah, on one hand, it sounds like a good idea, but the chances that you'll actually find somebody in your own community on a website that you're attracted to and actually compatible with, you know, it's good, kind of a stretch.
But now you have disclosed it to some guys you were dating, and some didn't run. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And, you know, this is an important thing for your listeners to know, is that, you know, dating is really hard, and sometimes people don't tell. Now, sometimes people don't tell because they're just mean. You know, I've heard people make the statement, hey, someone gave it to me, so I'm going to give it to everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Who cares? And I've also had people say to me in confidence, look, I wanted to tell him, you know, I was trying to find the way, and the other night it just got heated, and I didn't know what to do, and we got caught up in the moment, and I did it, and, you know, I don't know what to do now.
Wow.
You know, so there's the people who won't tell because they're mean, and the people who can't tell, or... get into, you know, and then once you get into that situation once, you kind of can't go back and say, oh, well, you know, I'm sorry that we had unprotected sex that one time. What I really wanted to do is tell you beforehand that I have HIV.
Wow.
Because then there's legal implications. So, you know, people, it's really hard. You get caught up in this whole thing, and it's really hard.
Wow. Thanks for staying tuned. You're listening to WSLR LPFM 96.5 Sarasota. And again, you're tuned into Perspectives with Kelvin Lumpkin. The Palm Grove Mennonite Church at 1087 Beneva Road in Sarasota is having a quilt and craft sale February 10th through the 13th from 8 to 5 and 8 to noon on Saturday. All proceeds from the sale go to the church's Haiti Mission Project, benefiting several schools serving more than 600 students. Also, the Sarasota Visual and Performing Arts Center at Booker High School performs a theatrical drama, Through the Looking Glass, February 10th through the 13th at 7:30 p.m. in the auditorium. For tickets and more information, contact Judy Piercy at 355-2967. Thank you so much. Valerie, we're going to continue our discussion with you, and so glad that you're on the show today. Valerie, when you first got your diagnosis, did you go through a period where you were kind of mad at God or maybe even mad at yourself after you got infected when you found out?
Boy, that's a good question. Not really. You know, I kind of went right to acceptance. I have a pretty strong spiritual background, and, you know, I pretty much went to acceptance. I did have a little hard time. I remember there was probably a couple months after I got diagnosed, I got a flu. Mm-hmm. And I really knew nothing about HIV. I knew, and I thought, oh my God, this is it. You know, I'm too young to die. Mm-hmm. And the truth of the matter is that I was too young to die, apparently, because I'm still here. Mm-hmm. And it was just a flu. It went away. But I remember how I felt in that moment and how scared I was. Mm-hmm. You know,
One thing that I've always wondered about you, I've always wanted to ask you, how do you stay mentally strong? Because, quite frankly, I can understand I've seen people who got infected who wanted to give up, and quite frankly, I could understand that response. But you seem to be so strong. How do you stay so strong?
Yeah, I can understand that response as well, because it's really hard to fight this fight. And I never really got angry with God. I've more grown into a place of, okay, God, please help me figure out what to do with this. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's part of what's gotten me on my mission, is that I never said, you know, why me? This stinks, you know. Mm-hmm. I didn't really go through any of that.
Really?
I went to acceptance and kind of said, okay, what am I supposed to do with this? Even when the tough and challenging things come up in my life. Mm-hmm. And what's really given me that perspective is I've been in recovery 12-step program for 23 years. I actually just mm-hmm. celebrated 23 years of recovery.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I also just turned 47 years old.
Congratulations.
Which, January is a big month for me. And both of those things are miracles.
So wait a minute now. You just turned 47.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, we've known each other for a little while now, because I thought you were in your 30s, I think we first met, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes.
Wow.
I had 40 was huge for me, because when I got diagnosed, I used to pray, just let me live to see 40. I mean, realistically, they told me I had no more than 18 months, and that was at 28 years old. So I was thinking, wow, 40, wouldn't that be great? Mm. And I turned 40, and I was healthy, and I'm like, okay, now what? You know?
Yeah.
So the thing that helps me to accept all of this and deal with it and put one foot in front of the other when most people wouldn't, are that I believe God brought me here for a reason. Mm-hmm. You know, and I believe that I have a purpose. And I see that every day as I educate, as I mentor other HIV-positive women who have nowhere to turn. And I remember those feelings. You know, I know that by reaching out and helping others, that I become stronger as well.
Now, Valerie, I heard you say one time, actually, I've heard you say this a couple of times.
Uh-oh.
that if you could give this virus back, you would not. I'm going to ask you that question one more time. So if God comes to you right now and says, I'll take this virus back, would you give it back?
And, you know, that's a good question, and it would depend. Would I give it back today? You know, today I'm really tired, and I don't feel good, and I'm tired of dealing with this medication. If I could erase the slate and have never had it, absolutely not. Because HIV has done really amazing things in my life. And please don't get me wrong. Here's my disclaimer. Don't run out and try and get HIV. I'm not saying it's this wonderful thing. But when I look at the negative ways that it's impacted my life, I also have to sit back and look at the positive ways that it's impacted my life. And there are so many of them.
Wow.
And I thank God for this disease. You know, I thank God for the ability to get up every morning and make a difference in the world and all of the positive things that this disease has done for me.
Yeah, and of course you've been a teacher and HIV educator for a number of years here locally, but now you're traveling around the country. Is that correct?
I am. And, you know, I speak at conferences on eating well and exercising and how, really with any chronic disease process, how caring for your body, the other parts that we can do in addition to our medications, and how caring for your own body can help those medications do what they're supposed to do. Also, how it helps you emotionally to take control physically. You know, when you eat better, you feel better. When you exercise, you feel better. When you feel better, you know, you're not as depressed. You're not as tired. You're not. There are a lot of reasons to do your part along with the medications. And I travel and speak to other HIV-positive women as well and help help them be inspired to take those steps for their own health and their own well-being, to not just leave it up to the medication.
Mm-hmm. Now, Valerie, now you alluded to earlier that even at this point, and we're, what, some 20-some years in really knowing about this virus, and you would think, one would think that the general public is better educated about this virus and that instances of discrimination should be lowering, but actually just recently, or maybe a couple of years ago, you actually had a doctor who refused to treat you.
Yeah, and you know, you would think that the stigma has gotten better, you would think that the understanding has gotten better, and actually it's gotten worse.
Really?
We've gone further underground, and I see people go to such extremes for their friends, family, partners not to know that they have it. It's really difficult to see where this disease has gone now. And yeah, I was turned away from LASIK surgery, and not only did he turn me away from treatment, but he treated me like you're something you scrape off your shoe. And that was just a few years ago, 3-4 years ago.
What's baffling about that? First of all, that's a doctor. You should know better. And the procedure that you were going to have is a bloodless procedure. Is that right?
Exactly. And what was different for me there is I had a voice. You know, in other times when I faced a discrimination like that, I tucked my tail and ran away when I got fired from my job or when that guy told me that AIDS is God's way of weeding out the population. But instead, I took that opportunity to educate that doctor and say, look, because I chose to tell you, there's no law that says I have to tell. Most people with HIV don't tell. They don't tell their doctors. They don't tell their family members. They don't tell their, unfortunately, their partners. I chose to tell you. So you're going to turn me away? And he said, well, we need to take special precautions and sterilize the room. I said, well, don't you sterilize after all your patients? Well, yeah, but we need to take special precautions with you. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, well, now I'm a little concerned for my well-being, because what about the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimate there are 400,000 people in this country who have HIV and have not yet been diagnosed. Mm-hmm. Now, what about when they sit in your chair, you don't take special precautions with them? Mm-hmm. What about the people who do know they have it but choose not to tell? What about when they sit in your chair? You don't take special precautions with them. I said, okay, now I'm concerned for my safety.
Yeah.
You know, and it took a long time to be able to get that strength and find that voice where I could actually challenge, especially a doctor, on the way you're going to treat me. But the reality is, AMFAR, the American Foundation for AIDS Research, did a survey of Americans in 2007. And they asked them questions about HIV-positive women. They just surveyed a general population. And I forgot to bring it with me today, so don't quote me on the numbers, but it's really close to what I'm saying. And when they asked about, I think it was 57% of the people surveyed said they would not be comfortable with an HIV-positive woman caring for their child.
Mm-hmm.
65% of the people surveyed said they would not be comfortable with an HIV-positive woman cutting their hair.
Wow.
97% of the people surveyed said that they would not be in a relationship with somebody that has HIV.
Wow.
So, you know, when I look at that, that's not old, mm-hmm. you know, and I've seen other studies like that, and they've included other countries, which, you know, that kind of changes it for me. But, you know, that was here. And that's how we still look at people with HIV. You wonder why we hide? You know?
Yeah. That's very disappointing, those numbers, and it shows we still have a long ways to go. I alluded to earlier, of course, I've been teaching HIV education at CAN for a number of years now, about 10 years now, and I can't believe, I don't know where the time has gone. But one of the reasons why I came to teach at CAN, I was actually asked to come to speak specifically to the African-American community and Latino communities. And the reason being is because there's a disproportionate number of African-Americans, Latinos, who are infected with this virus. I believe over half of the HIV cases in the United States are African-American, and when you look at the percentage of population, that's very disproportionate and very disturbing. Valerie, why do you think there's a disproportionate number of African-Americans who are infected with this virus?
I think it's exactly what we're talking about right now, the stigma. You know, in some communities, the stigma is worse, and the African-American and Latino communities are, you know, that the stigma that I'm talking about is bad enough, but it's even worse in those communities. Mm-hmm. And it's harder for, there tend to be tighter knit communities, I believe, in the African-American population. And, you know, let me tell it to you this way. I've tried to have a support group for women. I've tried, and some of the other local therapists that you know and organizations that you know have tried, and we can't get the women to come out. Hmm. Now, they'll call me one-on-one. I've got women of every racial background, every you name it, I've got it, who will call me one-on-one, but they will not come out to a group. And when I ask them why, they say, what if I see someone there I know? Well, if you see someone there you know, they're there for the same reason. Yeah, but what if they go back to my community? What if my kids find out? What if my, you know, and that's how, that's the place we're driven to, and it's really, it's heartbreaking. So in the African-American communities, if there's a tighter-knit community, that fear is a little bit greater. And it's always hard for me because I educate, you know, I'm in Newtown talking to teenagers, mm-hmm. and they're looking at me like, okay, so why is there a 47-year-old white woman standing here talking to us? And I explain to them because we have a lot of African-Americans that are positive, even teenagers, mm-hmm. but they're not willing to come out openly with their status where other people in their community will know and possibly judge them.
Well, now, and to take that point a little further, we've seen an interesting phenomenon that's probably not unique to the African-American community, but probably more acute in the African-American community, where there's a lot of men who are married, they have girlfriends, but have sex with other men. They don't consider themselves gay, and they don't consider themselves bisexual. Oprah Winfrey did a show some years ago about this phenomenon on being on the down low, I guess mm-hmm. called Being on the Down Low. And that author, I believe his name is J.L. King, who wrote a book about his own life of living the life on the down low. And it was very interesting when I caught the replay of that show. He doesn't consider himself gay. And doesn't consider himself bisexual, but was having sex, well, maybe still does have sex with other men, and there are countless other men who have the same attitude. I think that's very interesting, and maybe could that be a cause why there's such a rise of infections in African Americans?
It could be. There are, you know, lots of factors that they look at. And, yeah, that is not, you're right, and it's important to say that that is not just the African-American population, but the African-American population got a big spotlight put on it when he wrote that book. Mm. And, you know, there are, when it comes to sexual behavior, I mean, there are so many taboos and so many things that we don't talk about. And, yeah, there are a lot of the reasons.
But now, Val, and again, this problem is not, you know, unique to the African-American community because we know individuals and know of individuals, and it seems to be more men who do this, who are infected and almost get in such a state of denial that they almost convince themselves they're not infected, and they go out and continue to sleep with women, having unprotected sex with women. And this may sound crazy, and I don't know they even have a malicious intent per se, but they really convince themselves that they're okay. I mean, that's crazy.
Well, and I thought I knew something about denial because of all my years in recovery. You know, it's a term that we use and something we deal with. Until I started really to know some of these individuals. And they will make statements like, if I had what the doctors say I have, then I would be sick. Or if I'm not sick, I can't pass it on. Let me be crystal clear here. Even if you're not sick, if you have this virus, you can pass it on. I don't care if you're male or female. I don't care who you're sleeping with. No matter what you do, if you've got this virus, you can pass it on. Condoms are really, really, really effective in not passing it on. But what happens is, you know, people don't want to take that next step. You know, people don't even want to admit it on that level. I had a woman call me the other day, and she said, she's not positive, and she got my phone number. It's really, you know, long. And her husband got diagnosed.
Wow.
And she wants to know what to do. But when her husband got diagnosed, he didn't tell her. She only knows because she was going through some papers and found the positive test result. He did not tell her.
Wow.
So, you know, when a situation like that happens, the fear even to tell a spouse, and this is not an isolated situation. I had a therapist call me and say, hey, I have this woman. Can you talk to her? She's positive. And she has not told her fiancé they're getting married in a couple weeks.
Wow.
I mean, these are, and because we fear so much how we'll be treated, how we'll be discriminated against, what will happen in our lives, we build up this argument in our heads where somehow it's okay.
And, you know, it's interesting because as crazy as that sounds, this is probably more common than most people would realize. Since I've been doing work with HIV, I've heard so many stories about individuals who were positive before they got married. They knew about it and married someone anyways. And I think that our listeners need to understand this is really more common than you think, and you really can't take anything for granted.
Right. And I want to stress personal responsibility. If you've been at risk, and at risk means, you know, people seem to think, well, I'm not a prostitute or I'm not a gay man, so it doesn't matter. At risk means unprotected sex one time with a partner whose status you don't know. If you've been at risk, I encourage you to get tested. Know your status, know your partner's status. Excuse me. If you're sexually active, use a condom. I mean, you might know your partner's status today, but you don't know what they're doing when you're not home. Unless you're at that point in a relationship where you know 100%, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, where your partner is and what your partner's doing, please protect yourself. Because the bottom line is, no matter what those people are out there doing, if their partners were protecting themselves, they wouldn't get it.
And I want to clear up a misconception that a lot of people have. Every time I do an HIV class, I inevitably get this question. There is it must be a widespread perception that there are some people who are carriers, and I guess they can pass it on, but then they themselves are not infected themselves. And I think I want to stress to our listeners that there is no such thing as a carrier per se. If you infect it, then you will be affected eventually.
Yes, you can, no matter what. If you've got this virus in your body, even if you're healthy, like I am, you can pass this disease on. Therefore, it's important to take certain precautions. It's important to take, excuse me, if you're on medications, it's important to take them on time. Mm-hmm. If you're entering into a relationship or in a relationship, it's important to behave responsibly. Mm-hmm. Disclose to your partners. Use a condom. Talk to your case manager about it. If you're not positive and you're in a relationship, you cannot just look at that person and know what's going on inside their body. There's no way to know that somebody else has this disease unless they are tested.
Mm-hmm. Now, I was reading last night that there is a vaccine being tested in Thailand, I believe it is. Do you think there's going to be a vaccine for the virus pretty soon?
Pretty soon, no. I think that, you know, we've seen vaccines fall flat on their face, miserably failing mm-hmm. year after year after year. And I don't really think it'll be soon, depending on what your definition of soon is, maybe 10 years, okay? But we already have a vaccine. Don't do it and you won't get it. You know, if you're going to do it, use a condom.
Mm-hmm.
I, as far as I'm concerned, I struggle with that when there are so many people dying because they can't get medications and so many people living in fear and horror because they've got this disease. I'd rather see money get pumped into education to stop it from happening, but we're going to go the vaccine route. I think at some point there will be a vaccine,
mm-hmm.
but I don't really think it's anytime soon, and we need to do more education.
Yeah, what is interesting to me is that in spite of all the knowledge that we have now about this virus, and correct me if I'm incorrect, there seems to be no significant decline in the rate of infection. Do we still just have this mindset that it can't happen to us? And especially with teenagers, I think you and I are particularly concerned about.
Yeah, actually the CDC estimates that there are 55,000 new infections per year. So
wow.
Not only is there no decline, there are more infections every year than there were the year before.
Wow.
And one thing that I want to talk about is the fact that people who do have HIV or AIDS, who are taking medications, are out there having unprotected sex, and we see evidence of that on a regular basis. And again, I didn't bring these numbers with me, but I'm going to ballpark it. There's a new test that we've started doing on new positives, people who are newly diagnosed. And if they're tested at a state facility, their blood work goes to another lab, and it gets tested for resistances. I've had HIV for a really long time, and I've been taking medications for a really long time. Over time, my body builds up resistances. That means those medications won't work for me. If I took my virus, Kelvin, and put it in your body, not only would I give you HIV, but I would give you my resistances to those medications. So right off the bat, they would not work for you, most likely. Well, in these samples that have been sent to the lab, out of 600, and I think the number was 60 new diagnoses, 130 of them had resistances.
And I'm glad you say that, because that's one of the things that I didn't know when I came to teach for CAN, is that there are different strains of the virus, and some don't respond well to medications.
Right. And of those 600 and however many, there are 130 resistances. In the teenage population, 28% of the group 14 and 19 had resistances, and 21% of the age group 20 to 24 had resistances. So people are out there sleeping with our teens, not informing them they've got this virus. They're taking medication and they're passing it on. It can happen in any population, but to me, the teenagers, we need to educate them more.
Well, and you and I, both as educators, have had some challenges when we've gone to high schools. I don't know about you, but I've literally been called into the principal's office before a presentation. Brought back some flashbacks from high school and middle school. But, you know, just basically kind of censored us. Hey, you can't talk about this, you can't talk about that. And so there's a debate about how far should you go with teenagers. Some think that if you're talking about condoms, that it may be actually encouraging sexual activity. Then some are of the opinion that it won't. Do you think we should toe the line, or how far, or can we go too far when we're talking to teens?
I don't think we can go too far, because, you know, they don't have a fully developed brain. They're going to do what they're going to do. And when I go into a school and the teachers tell me that the kids are getting suspended for having sex in the bathroom in high school, and then I go to a middle school and I tell that story to a middle school teacher and she says, oh, yeah, we have them having sex under the bleachers. Oh. I mean, the parents cannot watch those kids 24 hours a day. I've had kids disclose to me that they've had sex on public transportation buses, in the restroom at Applebee's, in the dressing room at JCPenney.
Wow.
I mean, and they don't understand what the potential consequences can be to what they're doing. So if a lot of teens are doing this kind of stuff anyway, I just want them to live to the point where they can make good decisions.
Yeah, well, that it looks like we're going to be in business for a long time educating people about the HIV virus. It doesn't appear that this virus is going anywhere anytime soon. But I believe that you're absolutely making a difference. I applaud you for what you do. Stay strong and keep up the good fight. Do you have any final words for our listeners?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Kelvin. I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to get the information out there. And if you want to contact me, if you've got, you know, questions or anything, you can go to my website. Or if you want to see what I look like, it's the number 4HIVhelp.com. And I'll be more than happy to help you out if you need more information.
Great. Now, I hope this is not the last time you're going to be on our show. To all our listeners, thanks for tuning in to Perspectives today. I hope you'll join us on the second Wednesday of the month of March. And our guest is going to be Sarasota County Sheriff Tom Knight. So I hope you have a great day, a great week, and keep the faith. Again, you're listening to WSLR LPFM 96.5 Sarasota. God bless.